Welcome to the Wind Trust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And it's a big day. There's a lot going on. And I want to say that when I put out on Twitter what the various topics were going to be today, the most comments I got was the fact that I was going to be talking stocks and finance. But John Najarian is with us, as he is often. He's a contributor at CNBC, and he's the founder of the Najarian Family Office. And John knows that I can talk stocks. Right, John?
Indeed. Absolutely, Suzanne. I know that.
Okay. So
great to be on with you.
Look, yesterday's hearings were, you know, the talk of the news. Any words since yesterday on the impact of Comey's testimony? Is that impacting trading today?
Well, I normally think, Suzanne, I would just dismiss that, but I can't quite do that today because the dollar is so weak. And my question back and my question that I keep asking myself is the dollar weak because of the performances yesterday on Capitol Hill, or is it because of the weak performance by Ms. Le Pen in her country, France,
sure,
and their elections? It was a 3.5-hour affair last night. The fact that she did not do well, of course, is positive for the euro because she's one of the people that would like to take them out of the eurozone and off the euro. But obviously, if the euro is strong, it's drawing that strength from somewhere. And is that indeed the contributing factor over on the dollar side?
So when you're having when you're having this back and forth inside your own head, where do you tend to land?
Well, I also think it might be folks that are just a little nervous, given all the negativity that there's been, and without a real catalyst out there, Suzanne. In other words, as far as earnings and news, yes, we have FedEx coming our way tonight, but that's pretty thin gruel for a market trading at all-time record highs. I think the weakness in the dollar would normally be something that would promote the energy space and some of the commodities, of course, but it's not doing that today. So it's just, you know, sort of a mild sell-off, at least at this time, about 0.7%. And that's exactly matching what the overseas easing is as well. So could be sort of a coordinated effort to take a little off the table ahead of some events in early April.
And there are more Fed speakers today who people are saying could also affect the markets.
Absolutely. Kashkari, he was, of course, the lone dove, the dissenting vote in the recent, just last Wednesday meeting. And during that time, by the way, the 10-year yield was right around 2.6%. It's fallen to 2.42%. That might not seem big to your listeners, Suzanne, but that's a 5%, almost 6% move out of the Treasury.
Wow.
Very quickly. And it's to the downside after the Fed moved rates up. So a lot of that is telling you that maybe there's a little something going on that the Fed hadn't counted on as far as the inflation that they want to see. Now they're clearly not seeing it. And were they a catalyst for that?
And knowing that their comments are going to have such an enormous impact and that people are going to be hanging on every word, how much attention do you think these speakers put into every word they say? I mean, are they as careful about what they say as we assume they are?
They are very careful, but the nice thing about the speeches is that they can let out a little more during that kind of dissemination than they do when they've actually crafted it right down to the very word in those Fed statements, the minutes that they release after each meeting. So, in other words, an individual like Mr. Kashkari from the Minneapolis Fed could let a little more out during this time than they could if they were writing it down and publishing it. So, yes, people will pay and do pay close attention to these speeches, but I don't think it's those speeches as much that are moving the market as perhaps some of the political things that you and I just addressed.
Sure. And let's close out with a term that you raised in an article that you sent about the black swan gauge. So what does that mean and what's happening with the skew?
Well, the skews in the market are, of course, the black swans are the tails of a bell-shaped curve. If you could imagine, folks, a curve like you grade on, you know, A's on one end and F's on the other. The people that get A's and F's when you're grading on that bell-shaped curve are the very smallest numbers in the class. Most of them fall in the big, thick part in the middle. So when you get to those tails, those are the economic events that could rattle markets. Now, we're not seeing a lot of that so-called tail risk or black swan event risk on the horizon right now. Doesn't mean it couldn't sneak up on us very quickly, but we're waiting for the volatility, the VIX, to pick up and show us that there's a little more fear. There's really, we're lower in the fear gauge. We're less than half of where we were after the election, and we're 2 or 3 points under where we were at the beginning of this year, Suzanne. So we certainly haven't sniffed out much in the way of fear in the market yet.
And this is where the term hedging your bets comes from. Is that right?
Very true. People, you know, in particular, large endowments, hedge funds, people that are managing large sums of money, usually measuring in the billions, are trying to hedge. They're staying long stocks that they like, and they're trying to hedge by selling either call options or by buying some sort of protection under the market, just like an insurance policy on your car. And that purchase of that protection normally drives volatility or that fear metric up. And like I say, we're just at 12.5 for that measure. So it's not really at either the beginning of this year when it was 14.5 or after the election when it was 26. We're not seeing any of that yet.
John Najarian from the Najarian Family Offices, thank you so much, as always, for bringing us the news and making it so clear. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand, who is in Hawaii. I feel like Andrew and I are usually in the green room together. Somehow we didn't get invited on this trip.
He didn't even mention it to me.
Never mentioned it.
Yeah, just here and then he's gone.
And look at us, stuck here. So Andrew Herman, he's the editor or an editor. The editor? Are you like the
I'm
guy?
A senior editor. Okay. One of four.
You're a boss there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of.
At DNA Info, and he always comes in with some great tales from the neighborhoods of Chicago. And one that is really, you said, was one of the stories that was being read the most on DNA Info is this story about this couple who has a business in North Center, and they say that they're being run out of business because it came out on Facebook, really not intentionally, right, that they were Trump supporters.
Right, right. So this is kind of a tale of politics and big business mixing, and not to a good effect in this case. So this is Worlds of Music. It's at 4161 North Damon, and it's a musical instrument company owned by a woman, Suzanne Monk, and her husband. And as you say, they're both Trump supporters. And remember back when Trump was in town and when he was running during the campaign and they tried to have a rally at UIC and it got canceled. Well, she got on there and was defending. She got on Facebook and was defending Trump and that, quote unquote, outed her as a Trump supporter. And she says ever since then, she's been having a lot of trouble with her business. She's been getting threatening emails, threats to firebomb her store. The musicians are being told not to support them, according to her. And she says, you know, I've had enough of living in fear, and I'm going to close my brick and mortar store, and I'm going to just go to online sales of musical instruments.
Right. She raises a really interesting point here in her letter. She said that the behavior that she's seeing, she refers to it as acceptance of intolerance in the name of tolerance.
Uh-huh.
Right. This is something I think that we're seeing out there a lot from the, quote, liberal left, that they are behaving in ways that they're claiming are because they want more tolerance, but in fact, in a case like this, are expressing a whole lot of intolerance, especially because this statistic that came out in the article I thought was interesting, 2 million Illinois residents did vote for Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, I can't support threatening emails, but I do believe in voting with your pocketbook. If you don't like a company, where they stand on certain things, then that's certainly within your right not to shop there. I mean, we've seen some of this.
Nordstrom, Ivanka Trump's brand, sure.
Right, the president unloaded on Nordstrom. Whether or not that affected them, I don't know. The Apple CEO and all these tech companies,
right.
These guys are going around dumping on the president over his immigration and global trade policies. Another one was, remember when the CEO of Chick-fil-A came out and said he was against gay marriage, and that that became a galvanizing force for a lot of gay people not to eat at the restaurant.
Do you think, though, there's a difference between voting with your pocketbook and actually threatening someone?
Oh,
and, you know, if the behavior she's describing is accurate, this is not a city, you know, the behavior of a city that I think most of us want to think of as Chicago.
Right. I don't think threatening people is ever the answer to anything. But again, I do believe that if you don't like somebody's politics, it's all within your right not to spend your money there.
And she is saying that they're going to switch perhaps to an online version of the store. Which,
right. She'll have a broader audience.
Yeah.
And it seems like some of these bigger companies that weigh in on political aspects, they seem to be a little bit more insulated from things. Like, as you say, Nordstrom's.
Right.
I mean, this guy was the president of the United States and they dropped his daughter,
exactly,
knowing that he was probably going to drop some Twitters on him, you know?
Some tweets.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's turn to what sounds like good news, which is that for the first time, it sounds like since 1964, there's going to be a new CTA Rail car factory in Chicago making cars, as the mayor said, you know, by Chicago for Chicago.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
Pretty amazing. So this is in Hegewisch at 138th and Torrance, so far southeast side on the Indiana-Illinois state line. And yeah, so they announced they're going to build a $100 million plant on 45 acres, 170 employees, and they're going to make rail cars. Now, the interesting aspect of this is a company owned by the Chinese government.
I saw that, right.
Not just Chinese owned. This is the government owns
right.
this. CRRC, Saifeng America. And they make a lot of rail cars for countries around the world, mainly through for the third world, and they want to break into the U.S. market. And as part of their bid, it's a $1.3 billion bid with the CTA to build 800 cars. They said, we'll build a plant in your
right.
city.
And is it always the case that if they build a plant in Chicago that they have to hire people from Chicago to work there?
Well, not necessarily, but what you do fall under certain regulations about how much people are paid. There are certain city regulations about minimum wages and that kind of thing. I mean, city government, yeah, you have to work for the city and you have to live in the city.
Right.
But there's nothing tied to this, but you got to figure there'll be a lot of people from the city working in Hegewisch.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a nice Chicago, you know, history. I think there's some nostalgia here. We view ourselves as Midwestern. You think the rail cars, manufacturing. It feels like a good thing for the Chicago brand.
Right. So they have contracts with Boston, so they're making rail cars now for Boston, but they're also looking to win the contract in San Francisco, and if they win the San Francisco one, then they'll make the San Francisco cars here in Chicago too. So it could be
a big thing.
Could be a generator for a long time.
So I also want to talk to you about this article on DNA Info about the Chicagoans' feelings about communal tables. And they say, the article says that Chicagoans hate them, but they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was laughing when I read this article because I have not voiced this yet, how much I hate those tables.
Yeah.
I think everything is awkward about them. You don't know if really you're supposed to sit exactly next to someone.
Right.
Like at Le Pen Quotidien. Look, my business partner who speaks French would kill me. Let's just call it LPQ.
Okay.
They've got the long tables. There's a couple Starbucks. Why are they such a big thing?
Well, so you go into a restaurant and there's no individual tables and you basically have to sit at a long table with other
right.
people. Well, they make the most out of the small amount of space.
So it's good for the business of the restaurant.
Well, you could say it's good for the customers too. There'll be more places to sit down.
I guess, but who? It just feels to me like if I'm going to take a lunch break or if I'm going to have some, I'm looking for some space. Right? I don't need to actually sit down. And then you have to ignore the people next to you as if they're not there.
That's the interesting part. You can hear their conversations. But
right?
I'm with you. But then we were talking about this in the office, and we all love Benihana. And we all sit at a big table at Benihana.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Andrew Herman from DNA Info, thank you so much, as always.
All right.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And I have a first that has never happened. I am positive Steve will say this has never happened to him, where a guest on the show walked in with like a gorgeous bouquet of flowers. I mean, Ben sitting next to me, has that ever happened? No, this has just not happened. So I also know we're talking about something today that Steve would not be talking about, which is I was fascinated by the idea that we're having this 30-degree swing this week of this weather up to 70 by Friday. So I wanted to talk to Rennie Pedersen, who's the owner of Bliss Weddings and Events and also Wrap It Up Parties, because I'm just fascinated by what people do in this season of uncertainty. But first, let's talk about Rennie. Welcome to the show. Thank you for my flowers.
You're welcome. It's spring. It's the first, well, yesterday was the first day, but
still,
you needed some tulips.
I mean, sometimes
some
we
yellow
get like
tulips.
Food. This was much better. So tell us about Bliss Weddings, and I guess Wrap It Up Parties is a newer venture.
Yes. Yeah. Bliss Weddings has been around. This is our 17th year, and we do all full service events. We do weddings, we do corporate events, we do kind of larger scale events. And then we developed Wrap It Up Parties because there was a real need for an a la carte type of service. And we do everything. We break apart the planning process for weddings, and then we also do parties. We do showers, we do graduation parties, we do birthday parties, anniversary parties, we do anything, and we call it just because parties.
I love
that. So if you want to throw a party just because,
right,
you know, your dog is turning three, then we'll plan that party. So
I don't like my dog well enough to have a party for her. I really don't. People always get mad because I don't love my dog. She's going to be 12. Okay, so that's fantastic. And seems like there really is a need out there for these just because helping plan professionals.
That's right. And just to be able to have someone that you don't have to do absolutely everything. Like maybe you have a concept, but then you don't know where to go, or you don't know how to develop it, or you don't know where to have it, or you don't know, you know, the fine details, and we come in any part of it. You know, some people will call us 2 weeks before an event. We have somebody that wants something literally into next week. Yeah.
Okay.
And they want
something.
This like surprise dinner party idea.
I have a Just Because event coming up, so we'll chat after the show.
Oh, good.
So let's talk about this. Interestingly enough, the event that I'm thinking about is May 6th. It's for my niece's birthday, and mm-hmm. I have a large deck, and I think that's why she wanted to have the party. But as I'm thinking about it, I'm realizing how on earth do party planners account for the fact that we live in a city where most, you know, at least during the major months of party season in the spring, you can't predict. How do you plan for that?
Well, it's tricky. I know everybody sees and pulls inspiration from, you know, all these amazing photos that they find on Pinterest and Style Me Pretty, and that they're all in California. You know,
it's all
75 degrees and perfectly beautifully sunny without any clouds, no humidity. You know, it's beautiful. And so it's tricky. And I feel like we have to really think about here in Chicago. We think of it as your plan A is, you know, your kind of worst case scenario. If you want to do something outside. So if you want to do something on your deck, then you should plan for probably a tent or some sort of covering. You know,
as my first option.
As your first option. Uh-huh. And your plan B would be, okay, it's going to be beautiful. We don't need that. So instead of thinking your plan A is outdoors and everything is beautiful and everything is sunny and it's perfect.
And can anything be tented? Like, can a deck be tented?
A lot of things
tented?
Can be tented. And there's so many cool tents now. And you can get something as long as it's not, as long as everything's level.
Yeah.
As long as your surface is level. And you don't need a floor, and the weather hasn't been torrential for, you know, 2 weeks.
Right.
Then there's clear top tents that are beautiful, and you can see everything. You know, in case it is beautiful and you still have to have a tent, you can still see everything, and it still feels like you're, you know, you don't have a tent, but you have that as a backup, which is a lovely option.
So tell me, because I'm just curious about these stories, has there ever been kind of a disaster, like something where you had to really scramble?
Yes, many, many times.
Give us one.
So, for example, we had a wedding here at Wrigley Square, right down the road.
Yeah.
And we had the cultural center as the backup, and that's where the party was going to be. And literally 30 minutes before the ceremony, there was this band, and we were all watching every weather channel that there was on our phone, and it literally came. You could see it coming, and we got everybody out of there and inside, and where you could see in one of the rooms there in Gar Hall, it's all the windows face Millennium Park. And it was like black sky.
But you
know,
you were able to scramble like that and get everybody inside.
But we had a backup. We knew that was our backup.
Uh-huh.
So we were able to. And we had another event where they had two different venues. They had Cancer Survivor and they had Murphy Auditorium. And if it was bad weather, we put it all on the invitation. You know, we make everybody aware of the situation.
Right.
And we had to move. It was sideways rain. like an hour before, right. and we moved everybody to the Plan B.
I think one of the most important things you said earlier, a few minutes ago, was that you look at these beautiful photos and you assume that it's, you know, local. And in fact, it's probably in like Napa.
Totally.
Right?
They all are. Yeah.
And Party Slate, which is how we met through Julie Roth Novak. And Party Slate, I'm a huge fan of her as an entrepreneur. And they have these gorgeous photos. So how do we know when you're sorting through like on Party Slate, how do I know that this is not local?
Well, Party Slate is brilliant. Let me just say, we are huge, huge, huge fans. It has changed the way that event professionals, as just for the event.
Yeah.
So not the details. If you're looking for just a party or a corporate event or a large scale event, there is nothing else out there.
And it's a website, by the way. You can just
It's a website. Right. And so you can look, you can search by venue, you can search by theme, you can search all these different ways. And it's brilliant. So the beauty of that is that it gives you ideas.
Right.
And it most of them, to be honest, and which we're so happy about, is that a lot of the events are indoors.
Okay.
A lot of them are. There's some that are definitely outdoors and beautiful and under huge oak trees and amazing.
Right.
But for the most part, it's giving you an idea and it's giving you inspiration so that you can take that wherever you are.
Which must be so much more helpful to you
so
when people
helpful.
Come in, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful tool instead of, you know, like a Pinterest or a Style Me Pretty where it's just based on, you know, rings and dresses. Like, so many people, they don't need to see those pieces. They
right.
just want the actual event. They want to see the venue. What does the venue look like when it's, a corporate event versus a social or any kind of other social event?
So I'm going to assume that in Chicago, you don't encourage planning for outdoor anything really until what, June?
I mean, we do. We'll do an outdoor. We love to do outdoor. It's one of our favorite things. We're really good at it, about doing outdoor events. But we just say we won't do this unless your plan A is to be covered and to be, you know, fully under some sort of structure.
Rennie Pedersen, Bliss Weddings, Wrap It Up Parties. Thank you for my flowers.
You're welcome.
I'm going to give
it's
Steve so,
fun. So
much crap about this because I just want to know if anyone's ever brought him flowers. Just saying.
I'll bring him flowers next time.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And we're going to close out the show today with an awesome new product that I was introduced to by some folks at Polsky, because David Rabbi, who's the founder, co-founder and CEO of Tovala, was a graduate of the Polsky Center. And it looked so incredible to me that I almost didn't believe it. So I want to hear more about it. So David Rabbi's in the studio. The company and the product is called Tovala.
That's right.
So tell us, it's called the Keurig for food, or that's how it was described to me, sort of a ready, at-the-ready food machine.
Yeah, so basically we have two products. One is a smart steam oven that sits on your countertop and is connected to Wi-Fi, and the other is our meal service. So we have a team of chefs that have been trained at Alinea that make these amazing meals every week. They use all clean ingredients. They're all pre-prepped and ready to go. And they ship to your doorstep once a week, and everything arrives fresh. Every meal comes with a unique barcode. You scan the barcode under the oven, and the oven knows precisely how to cook your food to perfection every time, so that our chef's vision for his Alinea-trained food can be recreated in your home at the touch
That's
of a button.
That's insane. But let me be clear. You have to have the oven. It's not your regular oven. This is a special oven.
That's right. So the oven is part of the meal service, and because it can steam, it allows your food to cook much better than a traditional oven, because let's say you're cooking a chicken breast, it retains the moisture in the chicken but can also sear it perfectly. And you as the customer don't have to worry about that. All you do is scan the barcode. Our chef has done all the work to make sure that it cooks perfectly.
And how big is it?
The oven is about the size of a toaster oven, and it actually works on its own too. So it will replace your toaster oven, and there's an awesome immersive mobile app experience that teaches you how to cook your own food in the oven if you want to do that.
I almost can't believe it. It seems a little Star Trek to me, like we've now entered the world in which you just like push the buttons and the food shows up. I mean, more or less, but how is this working? I mean, are there just menus and menus tested until you have the perfect way to cook it in that short a time?
That's exactly right. Our chef has done tons and tons of testing to figure out the perfect way to cook salmon, the perfect way to cook hormone-free chicken breast, the perfect way to cook a stew. And all that work is baked into the barcode. And then he does all of the work to figure out flavors and marinades and sauces and garnishes and things that go with the meals. And you as the customer get a selection of 5 new meals every week to pick from. And again, you don't do anything. You get to enjoy the hard work that we've put in on the back end and that our oven enables you to enjoy.
So you won the New Venture Challenge, is that right, at the University of Chicago booth?
That's right, yes.
Okay, I can see why. And so this is now real, right? This thing exists.
It does.
And so how, I went onto the Tavala website. There's got a great video. It all makes it seem very easy. It sounds like it really is. So can I get it? What happens now?
Soon. So we've been working on this for almost 2 years now. It's been a long journey. We pre-sold a bunch of ovens. Those first 1,000 ovens will be in homes in the next 30 days, and those customers will get our meal service and really be the first ones to experience this across the whole country. 2 months after that, in about mid to late June, we're going to launch publicly, and we'll be open to anyone to buy. In the interim, if you want, you can pre-order the oven, and you'll be one of the first ones to get it in June.
And are you seeing particular areas of interest, like college dorms or WeWorks, or is there a particular market where you just think to yourself, we can own that?
So it's a fairly big market to us. Really, anyone that views dinner as a problem, whether they don't have the time or the solutions out there are not healthy enough or tasty enough, or they're just, you know, they're looking for something better, we can solve that problem. And to us, the core demographic, the people that are most excited about our product, are people that live in cities, they're really busy, they've probably tried one of these do-it-yourself cooking services, and it just takes too much time.
Right.
And really, they just don't want to have to sacrifice anything. They want their cake, and they want to be able to eat it too, right? They want something healthy, they want something tasty, and they don't want to have to do anything. They just want to push a button.
At what price point? What are we talking
about? The meals come in boxes. You get 3 meals for either single serving or double serving, and it nets out to $12 per meal, all in.
Oh, my God. And then what about purchasing? Is there an upfront purchase of the oven?
There is. The oven right now is pre-selling at a discount, but will ultimately retail for $399.
Okay. And so, but the oven is the only thing you need then to be able to order the food and cook the food.
That's exactly right.
Wow. I mean, really, I heard about this and almost couldn't believe that it was real, but it seems like it is. And you were even willing to bring the oven in here, which I really appreciated, but just felt like radio was probably not the best venue for that. Right,
right. Right. Yeah. I mean, people like you just don't believe that this is possible, and they doubt, you know, really how good the food is. And anyone that tries the food, we have people come visit our office. More than half the people that visit our office and try the food end up buying an oven, even though they're there not for that purpose. And we as a team have been eating the meals for the last 2 months. It's all we eat at home, at lunch, at work. It doesn't matter. The food is phenomenal. And really, that's what drives our business.
And where did the name come from?
So it's a play on the Italian word for table, which is tavola.
Uh-huh.
We were inspired by the language. It's something I've always loved, the Italian language, and really closely associated with food. And we envision families and couples sitting around the table enjoying our meals, and us making it easier for people to enjoy those meals really conveniently.
And are you finding that chefs have to make a million different iterations for gluten-free and vegan and vegetarian, or are you just kind of going healthy as the mantra?
Yeah, so we're driven by clean ingredients. So everything on the labels are really easy to pronounce, super clean. A lot of the meals will be gluten-free and paleo, but ultimately it's about clean ingredients for us.
David, Ravi, thank you so much. Tovala, people, TOVALA.com.
Yep.
People can go on. It's for real. Next time I'm going to ask you to bring me some food.
Done. Thank you so much for having me.